Welcome to the 20% True Podcast, Season 2, Dubious Creatures, Episode 10, Robert. I'm Carolyn Rahaman. Jonah had to admit that it was illuminating. The man on the other end of the phone sounded so relieved to have found them. His breath whooshed out over the line, louder than breath ever sounded in person, almost like the man had run to talk to him. Only after he'd caught his breath did he introduce himself. "Your dog and my dog are littermates." Jonah wondered how that made the two of them related. If their dogs were siblings, and the man probably thought of himself as a fur dad, and Jonah thought of himself as his dog's brother, did that make the man his uncle? His dad through dog? The man said, "I'm sure you've noticed that it's not an ordinary dog. I don't know if you've figured it out yet or not, if you've had any incidents." The man paused, but Jonah didn't know what to say. "I've found two of the other puppies," he continued, almost rambling now, "and only one of the other owners had put together what was happening, and they had already gotten rid of it." Jonah frowned. His dog, Robert, padded up and shoved his big head against Jonah's shoulder, demanding an ear scratch. "I found a place that takes dogs like this," the man said. "They know what they're doing, and they have resources and the expertise to handle these things." "Okay," Jonah said. "So let me give you their number. I already told them to expect your call." For a second, Jonah wasn't sure what was happening. Then, "Oh, wow! Do you mean they have obedience classes? Wow, you see, we just got kicked out of the one we were going to, and we don't know what to do." There was silence on the line. "Are your parents home?" Jonah knew better than to answer that. "My mom can't come to the phone right now." "Okay, well, let me give you my number and you have her call me just as soon as she can, okay?" The man read off his number and Jonah dutifully recorded it. "I know it might be hard to understand," the man said, "but your dog isn't a dog. It's only half dog and it's half... It's really important that you have your mother call me. Very important. We need to keep you safe and get your dog a good home." A good home? Jonah's ribs seized around his heart so tight he couldn't breathe. The man wanted to take Robert away. He couldn't answer as the man said goodbye and hung up. He just sat there as a dial tone rang in his ears. He only moved when Robert shoved him again, pushing him off balance. Jonah blinked, then scratched between Robert's ears, his fingernails digging into the dog's short black fur. The dog groaned, a deep note that reverberated in both their stomachs. Jonah stood, went to his room, and hid the number in the chest pocket of the suit jacket in the back of his closet. He'd outgrown it in his last growth spurt. The pocket was still sewn shut with two stitches, but he folded up the note enough to slip it in there where his mom would never find it. He wasn't letting anyone tear him and Robert apart. It didn't matter how difficult Robert was. Jonah got Robert as a puppy out of a cardboard box in front of the grocery store. The box had six puppies, which squirmed all over each other and tried to climb out of the box, yelping tiny barks. The puppy's mother, a sweet-tempered pity mix, lay next to the box, collapsed with exhaustion. She looked so tired and put upon that you would think she'd been mistreated, if not for her healthy weight and smooth coat, if not for her chipper owner, kneeling by the box and stroking the poor mother's side. The owner rolled the puppies back into the box whenever they managed to get a head or a paw out. The puppies' paws were enormous compared to the rest of them, looking as though they were all trying on their mother's shoes. While their mother was spotted black and white, every last one of the puppies was black, a glossy deep black that reminded Jonah of the rocks they'd looked at school. Igneous rocks, from volcanoes. Jonah's mother sighed as he begged for a puppy. She'd just agreed the day before that they could go to the animal shelter the next weekend, as long as Jonah held up his end of the dog-owning bargain. She'd written down his responsibilities, discussed them with him at the kitchen table, had him sign the bottom, and then laminated it, putting it on the fridge. He had to feed the dog every day, walk it morning and night, clean up after its messes, help with housebreaking it, brush it every week, bathe it every month, give it his heartworm pills, and take it to obedience lessons once a week on Wednesday afternoons. She'd already called the training center to see when classes started and if 10-year-olds were allowed. His mom was organized like that, and while she was fine with getting a shelter animal rather than something pricey from a pet store, she was hoping that they'd be able to get an older dog. Not old, per se, but not a puppy. Hopefully one that had already been neutered and had all its shots. Hopefully one where the animal shelter could tell her, "You want this dog. This dog is good-tempered and obedient." She was secretly hoping for an immaculately trained creature, whose doting owner had died unexpectedly. Or for a fully trained service dog, who had failed its final because it started at a gunshot, which would be fine with her. But other than that, it would be perfectly behaved and could obey streetlights or something. A puppy from a box was not part of her plan. But the owner had assured them that the mother was the sweetest, calmest creature. And Jonah had tears swimming in his eyes, his hands locked together against his chest, brimming with hope, his sleeves 2 inches too short. The parenting book that the school counselor had given her said that responsibilities and structure would help with Jonah's sullenness and irritability. They would provide him with a sense of control when he felt he had none. Jonah had no control over his body as it stretched and ached until he had no idea of his own height, his own strength, and was continuously gangly and bumping into things. Jonah had no control over when he got postcards from his dad, with beautiful images of the Thai rainforest on one side, and brief, excited descriptions of his fresh start on the other. Jonah had no control over his mom's work schedule, with hours that seemed to stretch at the same rate as Jonah's arms. His mom had promised him. Jonah picked a puppy, and they took it home, where it tore into shoes in the sofa, where it knocked over the trash can, ate a bunch of garbage, and then threw up on the rug, where it peed in corners and chewed on houseplants, where it snuggled under Jonah's blankets every night, burrowing under his chin, where it would snore a little whistling squeak. The moments of affection made it all worth it, made all Jonah's time on his knees rubbing at an accident with spot cleaner, all the trips to the store to buy a trash can with a child safety lock, all the time he spent feeding the ravenous dog, then wrestling it into a cardboard box and keeping it there for half an hour before taking it out to the yard so it would learn to do its business outside. Only for the dog to eat grass and stare at him, it made those worth it. It was a puppy. That's how puppies were. Jonah did everything on his dog-owning agreement and more. He did more because the dog required it. According to the internet, if you did it right, housebreaking wasn't supposed to take 3 months. According to the guy at the pet store, puppies didn't usually eat through leashes every 3 days. And maybe he should get the dog more chew toys? Robert was Jonah's, and Robert loved him unconditionally. He loved him and just didn't understand that his behavior was hurtful. He just didn't know. And if Jonah worked hard enough, Robert would learn and would both love him and not cause problems. Jonah's mom started to think she'd made a huge mistake. After a month, she'd relaxed her rules enough to take over morning walks because the boy was exhausted and had to get to school on time, and hauling the puppy through a walk without having his arm torn from his socket was a struggle. There was one walk where she seriously thought she may have broken her wrist, but the doctor said it was just a sprain and gave her a brace that made her look like she had carpal tunnel. They breathed a sigh of relief when training classes started, but then they seized up again when Robert tackled another dog, clamping little puppy teeth around its throat and shaking the other dog to the ground until it rolled onto its back in submission. Robert did this with bigger dogs, too. Even the full-grown German Shepherd, who was a kind thing named Peanut. Maybe Robert sensed the dog's kindness as a weakness. The other owner shouted and glared, one woman holding her Pekingese out of reach. They tried to separate the dogs, but reaching into a fight seemed like a bad idea. Jonah was breathless as he and his mom hauled Robert back by his collar so that the dog stood up on his back legs, still barking. Jonah wrapped Robert's leash twice around his wrist, both arms wrapped tight around the puppy's chest in a kind of wrestling lock. His mom was horribly embarrassed, swearing that she and the boy were trying all they could, promising to replace ripped collars and buy the owners donuts and drinks to buy their forgiveness. The instructor told them to come on Thursdays for private lessons before they thought about rejoining the class. door to Jonah's house was a fire station. On sunny days, the firefighters would sit outside and fold up beach chairs and drink lemonade. The station had one fire engine, a van, and an ambulance. They got about 20 calls each day, mostly from elderly people who had fallen. The bell would ring, signaling the severity of the call, and then what was identifiable as a woman's voice, but sounded more like wah, 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 would announce the location of the emergency. The firefighters would scramble into action, and a minute later, the sirens would sound as the truck swerved onto the road. It was so common that Jonah and his mother barely noticed it anymore, but everyone they spoke to on the phone, the boy's grandparents and his uncle and his fifth grade teacher and the school counselor and his mom's best friend, they noticed it. And they all worried about the safety of the neighborhood in which Jonah and his mom lived, like the neighbors were getting busted for cooking meth every day. The continuous sirens became less of a joke when Robert was added to the equation. The puppy spent all his time in the yard, staring through the fence at the relaxing firefighters. He stood absolutely still and stared. Then the dog started escaping the house, slipping past ankles without being noticed, hopping out windows that were left open to enjoy the breeze, eating his way through the floor in the closet to get down into the basement and unlock the door, which had a lever handle instead of a knob. He snuck out into the yard, and then he stared. Then he started getting out of the yard, digging under the fence, scrambling over the fence, opening the gate. He would leave the yard, but then sit, just on the other side of the fence, and stare. At first, the firefighters found the staring funny, but they soon decided it was creepy. The only thing to disrupt the staring was when the station got a call. At the bell, the dog would bounce to his feet, his tail up and alert, quivering with excitement. The announcement would come on, and the dog would explode into barks, spinning in circles. When the sirens went off, he would howl, a long, piercing bay that made several neighbors complain. Jonah and his mom went over to apologize to the firefighters, bringing a tray of cookies from Costco. They explained that the pitch of the bell must set the dog off, and they'd work on it in obedience classes. Just as soon as they got not growling at the obedience trainer under control. But the firefighters corrected them. The dog didn't hop up when it heard the bell. It hopped up before the bell rang. Every time. They could predict when a call was about to come in. It was creepy. As the dog got older, it got bigger. When they took it to get neutered, it weighed 60 pounds, and its paws still looked huge. It grew up and out, bulking and muscular, looking more like a bull mastiff than a pitty, and more like a bull than a bull mastiff. Sitting, its head reached Jonah's shoulder. If the dog didn't want to go somewhere, there was no way for Jonah or his mom to force it. All it had to do was lie down, and it became immovable. The firefighters started to predict the severity of their calls based on how excited the dog got, based on how much it salivated, thrilled at the scent of danger. The dog started to produce a smell like rotten eggs. Anytime Robert was rowdy, spinning around, jumping, running, the smell would increase, like his short fur provided a thin shield, barely containing the fumes, and any disruption let the smell escape. Jonah washed the dog in a tin tub in the backyard, digging his fingers into its fur to scrub at the skin, his arms coming away covered in lather and wet dog hair up to the elbows. The dog loved water, but didn't have strong feelings about baths. Any distraction and it was off, barking at the fire station before the firefighters exploded into activity, baying at a passing golden retriever out for a nice walk. Any chance the dog had to grab the hose from Jonah and dash around the yard, chewing holes in the hose and spraying water everywhere, and the dog was off. The baths didn't keep the smell away for long, and Jonah took to bathing it weekly rather than monthly, and his mom relaxed her rules again to come to his aid. Robert ate any food left out on the kitchen counters or in cabinets without child locks. These people food rampages included a whole uncooked turkey, bones and all. A crate of individually wrapped chocolate bars for the school fundraiser, costing Jonah's mom $240. And a box of elephant-shaped sweets and dried durian and raw Thai spices, leaving shredded soggy cardboard and international postage strewn all over the house. If the box had come with a note, Robert had eaten it. And maybe that was for the best. The dog ate all of Jonah's mom's dress shoes, and then broke into her closet to eat three of her cocktail dresses. The dog crushed Jonah's science fair volcano, and then ate three of his book reports. His teacher didn't believe him and called his mom to set up a parent-teacher conference, where his teacher didn't believe his mom either, and had the school counselor call them again. Then there was the barbecue. Jonah's mom had struggled with whether or not they should even host it, given that they had a huge dog that only liked Jonah, tolerated her, and hated everyone else with a shocking ferocity. She told herself that keeping the dog in the basement would work. He'd bark the whole time and be mad, but the barking wasn't as loud when the dog was in the basement, and they'd just pile some bricks in front of the door. It was a sunny day. Jonah's mom had set up some big umbrellas over long tables, and she topped each jalapeno popper with a plastic decorative toothpick in neon colors. One of the neighbors brought over a triple-decker grill and filled it with hot dogs and brats, burger patties of beef and buffalo and turkey and black beans. He charred corn on the cob and baked beans wrapped in tinfoil, and then he pulled out a full rack of ribs from a cooler, while a bunch of the dads on the block crowded around to admire them. The air around the grill wavered from the heat, almost as if Jonah could see the smells. The smells were so strong that, apparently, they reached the basement, because suddenly Robert was there, in the backyard, neighbors with paper plates throwing themselves out of his path as he charged straight for the meats, straight for the grill. The whole thing tumbled over with a crash that just kept going as more and more parts of the grill jarred loose, rack after rack clattering into the grass. It crashed against Robert's doghouse, knocking one whole side askew. Robert dragged meats into the house and snuggled up to chew as the roof caught fire along with a wide area of grass. High-pitched screams pierced at Jonah's eardrums, coming from every direction, the smells of wonderful barbecue overwhelmed by rotten eggs. And Robert scooted deeper into his house. He didn't fit too well, so he couldn't get back too far, but Jonah saw him scoot, almost huddle in on himself, and the boy was running, shouting for his dog, and he was on his knees in the doorway, thrusting his arms up to the elbows, grabbing at fur too short to grab, trying to haul a 100-pound dog out by his fingertips. Beefy arms snagged around his middle, dragging him away, and he was screaming with tears in his eyes that wouldn't fall in the heat, reaching for Robert as the roof collapsed and a blast of water hit what had once been a Snoopy doghouse. He screamed because his dog was in that fire, and the pain of watching and doing nothing hurt. It hurt. Jonah was rushed to the hospital and treated for second-degree burns. His mother cried. The firefighters all stopped by to give him stern lectures. Robert wasn't even singed. When his mom picked him up from school a week later, he took one look at her face and thought about shutting the door again. Jonah. He got in, but kept his backpack hugged to his chest like a shield. His mom stared at him another beat, then pulled out of the line of waiting cars and headed for home. At least, Jonah hoped they were headed for home. He ran through all the things he might have done since this morning to justify his mom driving him out to the woods to be raised by wolves. I got a call today from a man named Brian. Jonah didn't think he'd annoyed anyone named Brian, but his mom looked at him as if the name should ring all of his guilt bells, so he tried real hard to remember. He adopted one of Robert's littermates. Oh. Jonah hadn't considered that the man would call back. Guess what he had to say, That Robert's not a pit bull mix? No, Jonah. He is not a pit bull mix. He is, in fact, a hellhound mix. Oh. And guess what else Brian told me? Jonah stayed quiet. He told me that he called a month ago to warn us and talk to you, and you apparently forgot to mention this piece of information. What were you thinking? He's my dog. Like I wanted to take him away. For good reason! Jonah opened his mouth to argue that Robert was a good dog. He just didn't know how big he was. He didn't know his own strength. He was just too enthusiastic and too protective, and that's what people usually wanted from dogs. He was a good dog. He just needed more attention than other dogs. But Jonah didn't say any of that. With his arms still in bandages, he really didn't have a leg to stand on. What are you going to do? He asked. She sighed deep, like replacing every bit of air in her body could give her a new lease on life. Jonah, I've already done it. Jonah's chest hurt again. A sharp pain that echoed in his arms. What did you do? I took him to the Hellhound Sanctuary this morning. It's a nice facility. They're going to take good care of him there. He's with his own kind, and the people that run it have resources we don't. You gave him away? Yes, I did. Give him a second chance. He's had second chances, and third, and fourth. But this time he hurt you, and I am not letting that happen ever, ever again. No! Jonah had unwanted flashes of the times Robert had bumped him into table corners and left bruises in the fleshy space above his hips. The times Robert had been too excited to wait for Jonah to throw a ball and nipped it out of his hands, teeth scraping his fingers. How sometimes on walks, in the split second when the dog froze, smelling a deer or a squirrel, in the moment before he charged off barking and dragging Jonah behind, in those moments he'd felt fear. And the reality of that fear made his voice small as he said, "I hurt myself." "It's done, Jonah, done. The dog was dangerous and we're lucky I found out about it before it killed us both." Jonah thought about jumping from the moving car, but he didn't have a plan after that, so he sat there in fumes, staring at the road as it flew past. "I brought you some brochures, so you can see what it's like. They offered to send us updates if you'd like, but I'm not sure that's a good idea." Jonah didn't want to see the brochures. "We can get another dog. A real dog?" "I have a dog!" He jumped from the car as soon as they pulled into the driveway, before it had come to a complete stop. His mom shouted, "Jonah!" But he slammed the door and ran inside, locking himself in his room for the rest of the night. Three dogless weeks later, 3 weeks of waking without his feet asleep because Robert hadn't slept on his legs, 3 weeks of eerie silence with just the noise of the sirens next door without the counterpoint of raucous barking, 3 weeks without sloppy licks that left half his face wet and his hair slicked up, 3 weeks of startling at the smell of rotten eggs, of whipping his head around to find the source. 3 weeks later, Jonah waited under his usual lamppost for his mom to pick him up from school. He was speaking to his mom again, but he was still angry. Still sad. Most everyone had been picked up already. His mom was running late, and that was not helping his mood. Neither was the wind that blew too cold and too sharp. He tucked his hands inside his puffy vest and turtled his head to hide his neck into his collar. He heard it before he saw it, a pounding that rose up from beneath the wind as massive feet drummed the pavement. Robert came bolting down the street, ears pressed back, tongue and drool flying. Jonah straightened. Robert had come back. Robert had found him. Robert had escaped his imprisonment and come home. Just as his joy reached its peak, it faltered, because the dog was not slowing down. It was barreling straight towards him, and its eyes had a frightening glow that he'd never seen before. Where from a distance it looked as though it was racing for joy, now it looked crazed in its purpose. The slobber looked more like foam, its flattened ears more threatening than windblown. He'd been wrong. This was not Robert. This was not his dog, but an actual hellhound. Maybe one of the hellhounds from the sanctuary. Jonah took a step back, then another, but before he could run, the beast was on him, tackling him to the ground. Snarling teeth snapped and locked over his heart, which jerked to a stop and shattered before Jonah realized that the creature had a lock on his puffy vest. He kicked and screamed, clawing at the monster's face, digging his fingers into the cracks between its teeth, trying to pry it loose, trying to get his feet under him. But the monster was strong, and it was dragging him through the dirt and the fallen orange leaves. The smell of rotten eggs, of brimstone, assaulted his face, and his stomach twisted with how he'd longed for that smell just a moment ago. His fingers slipped on froth and ripped cotton padding, and the beast shook him like he was a chew toy, dragging him back and back, away from any witnesses, anyone that could help him, save him. A screech of brakes, a squeal of tires, and his heart leapt. Someone was coming. Someone was swerving to rescue him. And then a crash. A series of crashes, all piling together. The dog went still above him, then dropped him. The looming weight backed away, and Jonah peeked through the protection of his arms enough to see the lamppost he'd stood under waiting for his mom. The lamppost had cut deep into the hood of a car, almost as if the vehicle were made of butter. The hood crumpled and glass had shattered. The lamppost had tilted but not fallen, and the airbag in the driver's side had gone off. Everything was still, as if the accident had happened years ago, as if the car hadn't been moving a second ago, as if Jonah hadn't been standing right there, right in its path. He looked up at the dog, at Robert. The fire in his eyes had faded back to its usual warmth, and he was panting, his barrel chest puffing like a billows. Jonah! His mom hadn't bothered to pull her car over neatly, or even to shut the door behind her. She was out and running and fell to her knees and threw her arms around her son, squeezing him far too tight and muttering, "Baby, baby, my baby." People were appearing now, converging on the ruined car, speaking to the disoriented driver. A few people looked over at Jonah. One man approached them, jogging forward. He stopped when he noticed Robert's hugeness, but Robert seemed too tired to growl. Jonah's mom pulled back to push his hair from his face, cupping his cheeks in her hands. "Are you all right?" "Yeah," he said. "Yeah, I'm okay." She smothered him in another hug. "Robert knew," he said. He didn't know what to think of that. "Somehow he knew when he saved me." One of his mom's arms reached away from him, and a chill washed over his side for a moment before Robert's bulk was pulled into the hug, his mom's arm around his neck, dog breath hot and damp on their faces, the smell of brimstone hanging over them. The 20% True podcast was written and produced by me, Carolyn Rahman. Music was composed by Kamiku. If you like the show, please rate and review on iTunes so new people can find it. Follow the podcast on Facebook at facebook.com/20percenttrue, where you can leave comments and ask questions. Check out my website, 20percenttrue.blogspot.com, for updates, thoughts on writing, and book reviews. Or follow me on Twitter at CarrieAndTheHits.